Okay, March 31st, 2005. Interview with Stanley Fisher, wife Kathleen Casey attending. I guess we'll just get started by asking you the questions. About a notebook in case I have more questions to ask.
Oh,
but I won't be doing a lot of writing. I want to start out by asking, what was your life like before the war?
I was a member of a family. I had two sisters in Minneapolis, Minnesota. My father's name, you want that?
Sure. Yeah.
My father's name was Leonard. My mother's name was Malvira.
Okay.
Fisher was spelled F-I-S-C-H-E-R. That's a German name. And I had two sisters, Joyce and Muriel. They were younger than I. Joyce was next to me, and Muriel was the youngest. In sense now, Joyce is deceased, and Muriel's living still in Minneapolis.
Okay. Were you working, or were you in school before the war?
I was in school before the war in Roosevelt High School in Minneapolis.
Okay.
And I, if you can, I delivered Minneapolis Tribune. I had a job delivering the paper on a paper route in Minneapolis.
Okay. At the time, were you single or married?
I was just a kid.
Yeah. That's what I figured. And then I would suppose you didn't have children either. That's
no,
the next question.
No.
Did you have any political leanings before the war? And what were they?
Well, I guess I admired President Roosevelt, who was president at that time.
Right.
And I thought he was great. But remember, I was just a kid, too.
Right. And how did your thoughts on political leanings compare to your family's?
How did what?
Your thoughts on political leanings, how did they compare to your family's?
Well,
did they have the same beliefs you
do? In those days, a youngster didn't have many leanings one way or the other. Whoever was in was acceptable. Roosevelt was a Democrat.
Right.
And I barely knew what a Republican was.
Especially with Roosevelt being in there as many times as he was.
Yeah.
He was so used to seeing a Democrat.
Yeah, he was the only president that I recall that was in for three 4 years.
That's right. He was the only one, and he won the election four times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, shortly died after the war.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Where am I? Okay. What were your greatest daily concerns prior to the war?
The daily greatest concerns, if I was able to get to school and do the regular studies I was supposed to do, and just daily living. I had to get my...
Just living an everyday life.
Everyday life, that's right.
Okay, what was your family's perception regarding military?
I don't think they had one way or the other about the military. We knew you had to have an army, but that's all.
Did you have anyone in your family or community who was a veteran of World War I or any other conflict?
Yes, I had two uncles, my mother's brothers, Victor and Eugene. She had another brother, but I think he was too young. They were both in World War I.
Okay. Did your family's prior experience with the military in World War I or any conflicts or any of your other family, did they affect your perceptions of the military or influence you at all?
Well, no, except that I was, the fact that those two uncles had been in the military, I'd like to, if they had anything to say about it, I was very apt to want to hear it. But other than that, I have no idea about what it was.
Yeah, there's others. There's some families like mine, for instance, like after graduating high school, my grandfather and my uncle, my uncle was in the Air Force, and my grandfather was in the Navy during World War II, and they were all up for me going to the military, but I wanted to go straight to college, so.
Yeah, I suppose.
Okay, what were your perceptions of war and its combatants prior to the U.S. entry?
I don't think I had any. I had no connection with any wars, except that if we got into a war, we were all out to win it. Other than that, I didn't. Come in.
Hi,
no, thank you.
Oh, thank you, Melvin.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Well, did they even have? Well, was anyone really aware of a war before the United States entered?
Well, we'd heard of it in high school, and in those days, because of the radio, teachers at the senior high school that I went to had definite ideas. There was a history teacher by the name of Schultz that was from Germany. He spoke with a very distinctive brogue, and he had some thoughts about it. They weren't, they were Americanized types of thoughts. He was pushing Hitler, or even if he said anything, I don't remember.
Okay. Before the United States entered, did you have any, information about who was all in it, like Germany, Japan, and Great Britain?
Yes, I knew that. I knew that Great Britain, Australia, and we were on the same side.
We were on the same side. We hadn't entered yet.
Yeah, we hadn't entered yet, but I wasn't aware of where France stood at that time, no.
What were your opinions regarding the Axis powers, Germany and Japan, specifically?
Well, they were our enemy. I remember that. We were, when I was in junior high school, all this conflict started. Germany started preparing for an all-out war in the early 30s. And we all heard about it. So we knew it was coming, and it was quite apt that everybody was thinking about it.
Okay, and what were your opinions regarding the United States' actions prior to the war before we entered?
Before we entered the war, actually, we had to get ready. We were completely unprepared. We didn't even have much of an army. No Air Force, no Navy. Younger folks don't realize that now, but when the war started, we weren't. We couldn't have beat anybody. We didn't have nothing.
Well, it was in a lot of ways because of the we were just coming out of the Great Depression. So
well, that's true.
And actually, the war helped us out very much financially, economically. Considering before the war, we were building and supplying weapons to the Allied powers.
That's right. That's right. But we weren't ready for it. We had no army, Navy, or Air Force.
Okay. How did you feel about isolationism?
Well, at the time there was a great, there was a quite a large group that kept hollering about we should stay out of any world wars of any kind. And there were a lot of fellows like myself that, of course, we were kids, you weren't thinking the way you should, but we had a thought about we certainly didn't want to wind up part of Germany's intentions or Japanese intentions, certainly not. At that time, anything that was on the store shelves that came from Japan was junk. As you remember, if you bought little toys or something like that from Japan, It was real junk.
I think it's kind of ironic considering I'm using Japanese equipment right now.
Well, it's carried on all for 60 years, you see. And yet today, they built some of the finest automobiles that you've wanted to buy.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
About the war before we entered, and well, even after we entered, before you joined, where did you get most of your information about the war?
Out of the newspaper and the radio. There was newscasts on the radio. I think the habit in those days, at least in my house, where I grew up, we listened to the radio at supper time. And you listen, rather than talk among yourselves, there was a war brewing in Europe, and you listened to it. So that's what we did, is listen to the newscasts.
Did you ever catch any of Roosevelt's fireside chats?
Oh, yeah. Lots of them. Those were usually on a weekend, on Sundays.
Okay, where were you and what were you doing when you found out about the Pearl Harbor attack?
I was having dinner with some friends of mine in Great Falls, Montana. A good friend of mine, Ding, what was his name? His name that we called him Ding, but that wasn't his real name. Lenihan had just gotten married, and he was in his new wife. Asked the Peterson twins, were good friends of mine, and myself to come over to their house for a Sunday dinner. And while we were sitting there, we heard the radio that was in the living room there, tuned down low, that America had been attacked in Pearl Harbor. So that's all we talked about then.
And what was your initial response?
Well, you're a young man now. You don't know the consequences of it. You never were exposed to that before. So it was an exciting thing to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't thinking about getting in the service, but it was something different and new.
Could you probably relate the how you felt to a lot of the younger generation of today with the 9/11 attack?
Well, I mentioned the Peterson twins, and they were twins, and their name was Peterson. But we joked around about each other about we're going to have to get in the service now and go fight a war. Well, that was your first response.
And your family had the same response? Then.
Well, by then, I had left. My family lived in Minneapolis, and I had hitchhiked from Minneapolis about a year before out to Great Falls. And the reason for that was
a long hitchhike.
Mm-hmm. But in those days you got a ride.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
For anybody that saw you thumbing on the road, there was no none of this stuff. You were afraid to get on somebody's car, or neither was it anybody with a car that was going someplace wasn't afraid to pick you up. But now you couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
What was the community's response to Pearl Harbor?
The community's response, well, it was quite a thing. We'd been in a long and very costly depression. Those in the know were telling us, well, there's going to be jobs now, and there wasn't lots of jobs then. And there was, as it turns out, a tremendous move to prepare war material.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody worked. The ladies worked. Some of the airplanes I flew were built by women.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a change then.
Mm-hmm.
What people thought.
How did you feel after Pearl Harbor about going to war? Were you for or did you oppose the war?
Oh, I was ready to go. So was everybody else that I knew. There was no talk of getting away from the war like there is now. people run into Canada, like they do, or have done. So everybody's ready to go.
After growing up in Minneapolis and coming here, by that time did you feel like you were like a true Montana?
Well, I don't suppose I had any thoughts about it, about being a Montana one way or the other, but once you hit Montana, when I hitchhiked, you came across Dakota, went to Fargo, and then across Dakota, and Weebo is where we entered, where I entered the state, and went to Helena, and then north of Helena, up the Wolf Creek Canyon. And when I saw the Wolf Creek Canyon, that was wonders to me. I came from Minnesota, a wooded, flat country with lots of lakes. Beautiful, beautiful mountain ranges, and just a wonderful country.
Yeah, the reason why I asked that question is because the next question involves Jeanette Rankin. How did you feel about Jeanette Rankin being the only senator or the congressperson to vote against the war, especially being from Montana?
Well, the only thing I thought of, you'll pardon me, she was a woman. That's why she voted against the war. She was one of the first in Montana history, the woman that was held that rank.
She was actually the first woman ever to be in Congress. And she started out in the House of Representatives back during World War One. She voted against World War One too.
Mm-hmm.
And then she kind of retired, and then she went back to Congress as a senator, I believe.
And I'm going to add to it, she was a very outspoken woman besides.
Yeah, she in her later years, she was very involved with the community.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of civil rights and stuff. How did you get involved with the military? Were you enlisted? Did you enlist or were you drafted?
No, just prior to that, in June 1942, the war had just started in December of 1941, and everybody thought about it. But I had been going with a young girl by the name of Evelyn Johnson. And when we heard that the war had started, we talked about, well, should we get married? Shouldn't we get married? And I think what influenced us mostly was that if we got married, then if something happened to me, she'd have, something would happen that would help her and would get on with her life. So we got married on the 20th of June, 1942.
And then you were, so I'm guessing you enlisted then.
Oh, you did ask, enlisted.
Yeah.
I went directly down to the Civic Center in Great Falls. That's where the induction center was. And signed a paper to go on to enlist in the war, and then I was sent through a long, wound up in Camp Crowder, Missouri.
Why did you enlist?
Well, because there were various posters, and there was quite a push through the radio and in the paper, and everybody was talking about it. The government wanted all the young men to enlist. Not only was that, you were going to be either enlisted or you were going to get drafted. So the best thing to do was to enlist.
Okay. What were your expectations?
Well, I had no idea what the Army was going to be like, but I wound up in the Signal Corps, which actually pointed me in the right way if there had to be a war. That was a good place to enlist and wind up in the Signal Corps, rather than in the... to be an enlisted man in the Army, a rifleman. That was the toughest one.
So what made you decide to choose the Army?
Well, I guess that was the closest thing. I didn't know, there wasn't much of an Air Force.
Yeah, I think it was just started that.
They had just really started. I don't think they owned many, the government didn't own that many airplanes. It was a, who knew what an airplane would do in a war? You never had any excuse or any reason to have an airplane. And mostly it was kind of a an extra thing to do. You could, we didn't, there was no air travel of sorts, any kind at all. A little bit, but not much.
It's kind of a hard thing to believe considering the airplane became such a big major factor.
Sure did.
Did any of your family or friends, did any family or friends enlisting influence your decision?
No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I had to read that one twice.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell them, yeah, we didn't, I didn't actually make up a lot of these questions.
Yeah.
We did it as a class.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Except for the stuff that's more specific about yours than I did that.
Yeah.
Where did you do your basic training and for how long?
In Camp Crowder, Missouri, and that was for about a year, because about the time I enlisted in 42, in 43 we shipped overseas to England.
Okay. And was basic training everything you expected?
Well, I had no expectations about what it was like. The only thing that was very interesting was that at that time, the Signal Corps picked out inductees that were interested in flying. And prior to the war, in Minneapolis, for something else to do, I lived in South Minneapolis, and we went out to, biked out to Old Chamberlain Airfield, just south of where I lived. And they didn't give you any money pay. They didn't hire you that way, but they allowed you to, they gave you things to do, and mostly it was just to clean the aircraft. And then once a week, your pay was a trip around Minneapolis in a Ford dry motor.
Mm-hmm.
That was your pay.
Well, were you kept informed about world affairs during basic training?
No, I don't think so. You were pretty well consumed by Army life and what was going on, where you were going and that sort of thing.
But you were pretty much isolated about what was going on during the war?
Well, yeah, until we got overseas.
Okay.
Until we got overseas.
Okay, how is military life different from your civilian life?
Mm-hmm.
Awfully bad question.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you lived in a barracks with a bunch of other fellas, and you went to the mess hall. The first a day, briefly,
yeah, privacy and gross food.
Yeah.
Briefly a day you spent, first thing you did was you got up at 5 o'clock, you got dressed, you went to eat at 6 o'clock at the mess hall, and at 7 o'clock you started your daily work, whatever that was. We were taught the basic radio repair gradually, how to build a very small radio receiver, but you learned the basics of radio repair at that time. AM radio.
Mm-hmm.
There was no such thing as FM at that time, and certainly there was no TV, but radio repair in vehicles. We spent a lot of time putting a radio in a vehicle and running it around the country, and telephone back to the base, that sort of thing. further out you went, the more you had to tell them where you were and so forth.
Okay. How did you feel about being away from home?
Well, I had gone from home in Minneapolis to Great Falls, so I was away from home. I don't think I thought anything about it, one way or the other. I think I missed my parents and my sisters, but you got so busy you lost track of that.
Okay. How much contact did you have with people at home?
None. I don't think I wrote to my family. I wrote to my, at least once a week, I wrote to my new wife at that time, and she wrote to me.
Was it pretty hard being away from her?
Well, I don't know that you were so busy that you didn't think about it, although I suppose I did think about it at a time or two. I wish I had home. Yeah.
Okay. What do you remember most about basic training?
Basic training was getting up in the morning at 5 o'clock, go to the latrine, get shaved or showered or whatever with cold water. Go to the parade field and then go to the school where I learned where they taught radio repair and all that sort of thing, the whole day. Except for noon, you stopped at noon, went to the mess hall and ate. And then you went from there back to the where you were working. And when evening came, I think about 5 o'clock, they stopped at 5 right now, and they did the same thing at lunchtime. So, and it was all either a bell rang or a bugle tooted, so that kept you pretty much informed mm-hmm. when it was time to go.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything about basic training that you liked?
Well, what you learned in basic training was how to parade. And as you grew into it, the next thing that they did to you was to hand you a rifle, then take you to a school, and you took the rifle all apart, a 103 30-06 rifle, an old gun I remember now. And you could take it apart and put it back together in a few minutes, and no tools. You didn't have a tool. So you took care of your feet, you took care of your physical being, and guard duty every week. You were chosen for guard duty. It was on a bulletin board, which you had to do, and my guard duty went on. They split up 24 hours by 8 hour moments. You were on 8 hours.
Okay. What did you like least about basic training?
A KP. KP.
Kitchen patrol.
Kitchen police. And it was, I don't know why they called it kitchen police, because you didn't police nothing. You peeled potatoes or vegetables. You did what the cook told you to do.
So it's almost like the stereotype they use in the cartoons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the back peeling potatoes.
Yeah. Peel potatoes or vegetables or wash dishes. And in those days, there were no dishwashers. You washed dishes by hand. So that's about the size of it. Or it was cleaning or preparing meals, or cleaning the mess hall. So you worked the whole time, and mess sergeants had they were tough guys. You did everything the way they wanted it done, or you did it over.
What did you do for recreation during basic training?
Well, you didn't have, there was no basic, there was no, I don't remember that. You got so blasted tired that when it was over with, you crawled on top of your sack and went to sleep until they... In those days, it was all bugle. The bugler was busy. He'd sing or play that bugle when it was mess time or parade time or get-up time, or they even played it at 9 o'clock at night. Yeah, lights out, radios out, if anybody had. Of course, nobody had any little radios that carried around. There was no such thing.
Okay. What was it like meeting people from around the United States?
Well, that was a very enjoyable thing. You met lots of different people. Young men from different parts of the country. They were all mixed together. There was people, as we were, from Montana. Met people from New York or New Jersey or Florida. And you got so that you learned about how we lived, what kind of a nation we were.
How so many differences can unite.
Yeah, there were so many different ones. And at that time, they didn't take the Negro boys and mix in with us. The Negroes were all kept in one place. They had their own army of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea then was that it wasn't right to mix up the races. Negroes were second-hand people.
We were second-hand soldiers.
Yeah, the second-hand soldiers.
They were just thrown on the front line.
That's right. They threw them on the front line. The Negroes, our cat Tuskegee's, had their own Air Force.
Okay.
And they were called the Tuskegee's, and they were good men, too.
Yeah, I think I've seen a recent History Channel documentary on that.
Yeah, Tuskegee, I think Tuskegee is right. Pronounce it.
Meeting new people, did it create any tension?
No. Yeah, everybody treated you like $1 million. A curious thing, when we went, they gave you 2 weeks off before they shipped you overseas to go home. And by then I had a 1934 Ford Coupe. And all the way home, at that time gasoline was rationed and you had to have a ticket to get 5 gallons or 10 gallons or whatever. And every place I stopped on the way home to Great Falls that you went into a service station, they wouldn't take the tickets. They'd give you the gas, but they wouldn't take the tickets. So when you got home, you hadn't used any of them, ration tickets. So I gave them to my father-in-law, and he used them the way he wanted to.
So they basically gave you gas for being a soldier?
They gave you paid for the gas, but they,